Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. An ESPN commentator once called Jason Kendall the toughest player he had ever met and one of the most insightful. Kendall played catcher for the Royals in 2010 in his final season in the major leagues in a career that spanned 15 seasons. He and the Stars' Lee Judge have a new book out designed to explain how the game of baseball is really played. One point, young players should never look at the umpire if they question a call. We'll find out why in just a minute. Jason Kendall is the author of the new book, Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game is Really Played. Nice to have you, Jason. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I appreciate it.
And the book was co-written with Lee Judge, who writes a baseball blog for the Star called Judging the Royals. He's also the Star's longtime editorial cartoonist. And Lee, good to have you, too.
Thanks Welcome. For having me.
Yeah. Jason, you never look back at the umpire. Why not?
Well, I mean, there's so many unwritten rules in baseball, but I think the main thing is as a catcher, you talk to the umpire nonstop, and it's one of the things that nobody sees.
And I didn't know that.
Fan sees it, and you can maybe see your jaw moving or your mask moving up and down, but from the first pitch on to the last pitch, and the not turning around part is pretty much when you're arguing, balls and strikes, and it's just kind of, you turn around, someone's getting ejected.
Because why?
It's just it's a respect factor, and it's
you're showing the fans that you're disagreeing with what he's doing,
and you're showing the umpire up. And,
yeah,
you know, these umpires, they have actually more of a tough travel schedule than the actual players. I mean, these guys are going to cities for 3-4 days, hopping on a plane, going to the next one. I believe they get two-week vacations during the summer, but their travel schedule is pretty darn stinking tough as far as not seeing their family, not seeing their kids, and they're missing a lot of their family life. But, I mean, it's just an unwritten rule that you don't go out and show the umpire up. You don't embarrass yourself. You don't embarrass your teammate. But when you're arguing balls and strikes, it's one of those things where you have to do it because you're trying to get your pitcher, certain pitches on whatever side of the plate it might be.
You're lobbying.
Absolutely. And when your at-bat turns around, maybe seventh, eighth inning, whenever you're up and the game might be on the line, you might get that borderline pitch to where when you're hitting it. It's just one of those things that just happens during a baseball game.
Lee Judge, there's a great story in this book about a young player who turns around and talks to the umpire and how your buddy here, Jason, responded to that. Tell us about that.
Well, that was one of the most fascinating stories in the book to me. And if the young guy looks back, Jason, I asked him, do you make it worse? And he said, absolutely. He'll egg the umpire on. Like, did you see the look he just gave you? And if he can get those two arguing and mad at each other, he can move further off the plate and get those pitches called strikes.
Because the umpire is not happy with the hitter, and he's going to respond accordingly.
He's going to retaliate.
Any human being does that.
Right.
Yeah. That's the other thing that just amazed me about this book, Jason, which is how frank you were about the retaliation aspect of Major League Baseball. This happens, the response is going to be someone's going to get hit. It just sort of, some sign of disrespect happens over here, there's going to be a price paid on the other side at some point later on in this game. Do I have that right?
Definitely, and I think everybody knows it. Just nobody will really come out and say it.
Well, that's exactly right.
And
no one wants to say it.
No one wants
to believe it, I don't think.
Well, it's, once again, an unwritten rule. And there's a part in the book, and it talks about the Brewers when I was playing for them, and they hit one of our star players. And nowadays, there's warnings. And immediately, if an umpire believes that a pitcher is intentionally thrown at a hitter, there's a warning. So if our pitcher would go in to protect our players, he's getting thrown out of the game. But that all being said, it all comes full circle, and eventually you're going to play against those teams again. It might even be the following year. And things that baseball players don't forget.
In other words, you're saying that given the way the game is played today, if an umpire is going to toss your star pitcher, the retaliation might not be till the next night or 2 weeks later or the next season.
Absolutely, and it all depends on the situation. I mean, if we're losing 10-0 and our player gets hit and there's a warning, we're losing 10-0, game's out of line. I'll go out and I'll pay the pitcher's fine, hit and protect your players. That's what you're supposed to do. But if it's a tight game, you don't want your pitcher getting, you know, thrown out of the game, because it all depends on the situation of the game. It really, really does. But once again, you will play those teams. You will face that guy. It could even be with a different team. And things you don't forget.
The score is being kept in a different sort of way.
Absolutely.
Lee Judge, you wanted to write this book. Why?
For the money?
Get out of here.
No, my original intention was to write a book for fans, and I hope that's what we did, because I'd been hanging out with the major league players, and they were making the game so much more entertaining for me. because they were telling me this kind of stuff, and it's all there if you know what to look for.
And you're a guy who watches a lot of baseball. You watch every game the Royals play.
Yeah, I've watched every game the Royals have played. I'm working on my fifth year.
You're sick, man.
Well, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
But what they had done for me is suddenly at-bats that might seem meaningless to most of us were really interesting. There were situations that were really interesting that I'd never noticed before and never seen before, and I wanted to write a book for fans to bring them along with me and say, this is what I've been taught to look for.
For example?
Okay, your pitcher has a really long inning. He throws 27 pitches. The batters that are coming up, he sits down, his batters are going to the plate. They need to take pitches because he just had a 27-pitch inning.
He needs a break.
He needs a break. The other pitcher knows exactly what's going to happen, and he throws the first pitch fastball down the middle because he knows they're taking pitches, and fans are sitting upstairs going, oh, look at that. He took a pitch right down the middle. Of course he did. He's given his pitcher a break. And if a hitter comes up and he doesn't take that pitch down the middle, it's selfish baseball. Mm-hmm. He's worried about his average because it's like, I know I'm getting a fastball down the middle, so I want to swing. So situations like that that you would just go right past me before, now I look at them and they're so interesting. Outfield alignment. I can look at the outfield now and I've got a pretty good idea of how they're going to pitch the guy at the plate. And when the ball goes in the gap, then you've got a pretty good idea. Was it the defensive alignment or did the guy throw the wrong pitch or did he throw the right pitch and he put it in the wrong place?
You also told me a story a couple weeks ago about defensive alignment in the outfield and how the Royals outfield coach will move players and sometimes he moves them sort of just to move them.
Yeah, because they get bored.
They get bored. Yeah.
Rusty Cooch is the Royals outfield coach and he's a great guy. And he told me, When an outfielder's feet get too wide, he has to move them. And I said, what does that mean? He said, well, when they're ready to go, they're shoulder width. And as they get more and more bored, their hands go to their hips, then their hands go to their knees, and he'll move them. And I said, you move them right back on the next pitch? He goes, oh, yeah. And I said, do they come in and go, Rusty, what the heck are we doing out there? And he goes, the smart ones do. And he said, I'm waking you up. I'm protecting you from yourself. And that's like a little thing. You go to games, watch the outfielders. When someone hits a foul ball, do their feet move? And if their feet don't move, they've zoned out.
And I think getting back to what the first question you asked him as far as the pitcher having a 25, 30-pitch inning and a guy, you have to know, and this is one of the things that's in the book as far as knowing the game, people have to realize that these pitchers are max effort every pitch. It's not just, shortstop maybe getting a play, two plays every two or three innings. It's max effort every – they need a certain amount of rest in between innings. So if you're leading off that inning and you're swinging at that first pitch and you make an out, I mean, this guy just sat down and got to think, a glass of water or a cup of water. And there's certain things where, I mean, these guys need that little extra rest. And so that's what – the question you asked, that's what, I mean, they have to have that rest, it's their bodies. I mean, the arm's not supposed to do that. It's supposed to come underneath.
Yeah. Are there some players that you know of in Major League Baseball who will give that pitcher a rest every time, but then some who are so selfish, Jason, that they won't do that?
Yes and no. Yes, it all depends on the situation of the game. I mean, if it's a one-run game in the seventh, eighth inning, you know what? There might be another guy coming in. You might have to get that first pitch. I mean, it all depends on the situation of the game. But if you're in the early innings and you got your starting pitcher on the mound and he's kind of huffing and puffing a little bit because he had a long inning, you take, and you know what? The worst thing that can happen is you get out, but you give him that rest. So you know what? Maybe he goes out and has a 15, 20-pitch inning, the next inning.
Yeah. There's another story that I wanted to ask you about, Lee Judge, that you caught from Jason, this notion of there was a play at the plate, a runner rounding third. You're watching it on TV, and Jason wasn't paying that much attention, but then he sort of snapped to, and he said, send the runner home because under the circumstances of that moment, it was the right thing to do, and it didn't happen. Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, what he said was, send him, he's left-handed.
Yes.
And I had no idea who he's talking about. Like, the runner's left-handed. I don't, why are you sending him because he's left-handed? And Jason gave me a look of disgust, which you've probably already experienced by the time he'd walked in the room now.
He does that.
See? Yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
And it was the first baseman. And he knew the throw was an overthrow at first. The first baseman had to chase it down. When a lefty throws, the ball tails to his arm side. So when the first baseman.
To his arm side, meaning what?
His throwing side.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I'm left-handed and I throw it to home plate, it's going to go to the right field side of home. Mm-hmm. And he's going to pull the catcher away from the plate, and that runner is going
to
have
room
a couple steps to score. And he, as far as I knew, he wasn't paying attention. But he did. It's just like you
just instinctually he knew what the situation was, right, and what to do.
You have to automatically register the lefties on the field. Yeah. Because that gives you an advantage.
Yeah. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking this morning about a new book, Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game is Really Played. It's written by Jason Kendall with Lee Judge from The Star. If you want to join our conversation, you know you're welcome to do so. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, Jason, you're talking to a guy who's covered politics, you know, most of his career. So I was fascinated by the level of politicking that you talk about in this book. I want to go to page 95, okay? And this just stopped me in the book. The two of you are talking about the need for players to pay their dues. And Jason points out this. You say this, Jason, the game is based on relationships. And that just floored me. I thought relationships, because I thought it was based on balls and strikes and balls hit over the fence and singles and doubles. And you're talking about interpersonal relationships making such a big difference in the game. Why?
Well, I think nowadays it's a little, and you have to learn to change with the times. I know when I broke in, my first year was 96. You didn't speak until you were spoken to. Your head was in your locker. And I guess you could say it's another one of the unwritten rules. But, I mean, you're looking at guys. I mean, I'm playing with, you know, Jay Bell, Jeff King, Zane Smith, Danny Darwin, guys that, you know, had some time in the big leagues. And it's just a respect factor. It's pretty much like anything you do, whether it be starting out at a new job. Well, there's guys, maybe for instance, the radio show. There's guys that have been here for 10, 15 years, and you pay your dues. And it's not – what happens on the field, you play – there's two easy things to do in this game, hustle and be prepared. That's it. So you take that, and you know what? You just kind of keep quiet, and you go about your business as a younger player, a rookie player, a second-year player. And eventually, it's one thing to get to the big leagues. It's another thing to stay. And if you do things the right way – it's a lot easier to stay.
Yeah, I was struck by the fact that you used to buy beer for members of the grounds crew. You bought them beer. Why?
That was one of the hardest working people in the game.
And you want stuff from them, right?
No, you know what? I wasn't so. I mean, trust me. The behind home plate everywhere I played was absolutely perfect because every time I'd come in, hey guys, here's 6-7 cases of beer. These guys bust their butts in every big league ballpark you go to. It's like playing on a golf course. Mm-hmm. The grass is that good. But no, trust me, there is during the summertime when it gets hot and you get that little dry spell, the home plate was watered down perfect for me throughout the whole game. You know, hey, different. You got your Bud Light, your Coors Light. But you know what? You got to take care of those guys.
And even the pitcher's mound and how it's taken care of, you might want it taken care of a certain way for certain pitchers.
Absolutely. And certain guys like certain things. But now there's these rules where they could only be so high, so low, and some of these ground crew guys might inch higher, inch lower, but there are people who come around and check the height of the mounds. It's kind of crazy, but they actually do that.
You also talk in Throwback, Jason, about the pristine nature of the baseball itself, and sometimes getting a scuff on that baseball is something that plays to your pitcher's advantage. Again, I'd never thought about this kind of thing before. You're talking in the book about you're doing the throw around before an inning begins and your pitcher begins to throw to the opposing team's batter, and maybe sometimes in that last throw to second base, you might bounce the ball to second base. You'd bounce it. Why?
Get a little scuff on the ball. And usually your veteran players will take advantage of that. But you know what? It's things you have to work on. At 3 o'clock, early batting practice, when you're down just warming up, get a scuffed baseball, throw it, and learn how to throw it because you can get the extra sink. You can get the extra cut on that ball. Players nowadays, they get a scuffed ball, they're like, oh, I don't want it. It's such an advantage. But, I mean, you have to work on things like that. But if you see a veteran player, and it's really funny to me now because every ball that hits the dirt is thrown out. Mm-hmm. But now if you hit a ground ball, it's hitting the dirt just as hard as it is, but they don't throw that ball out.
It's
mind-boggling to me.
And so, that's a prize for the pitcher because the pitcher can do more with that ball.
If he knows how to throw it, but it's one of those things you have to work on, you know, because it happens all the time. There's scuff on baseball the ones they don't throw out, the ones that hit the dirt that the catchers are picking, they throw those out. But throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, it comes off the bat at 96, 97, ground ball to shortstop, there's going to be a scuff on it because it hit the dirt. And it blows me away that they don't throw those balls out, to be honest with you. And the pitchers get the ball and, I don't want that one. Give me a new one. No, work on it and throw it because it does. You can get much more life on the ball with a little scuff on it.
how the game of baseball is really played. That's our topic. We're visiting with Jason Kendall and Lee Judge. Let's go to some phone calls here. Rebecca from Overland Park. Rebecca, you're on with our gentleman here this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I just had a question for Jason. I'm actually from Pittsburgh, born and raised, and I spent most of your career at Three Rivers Stadium. And I just had a question. I was wondering if you think it makes a difference to the morale of the team when the players stay with the team for a consistent amount of time, as opposed to when players tend to move fairly regularly.
Absolutely, Rebecca. You know, I would have loved to stay in Pittsburgh my whole career. That being said, I wanted to win, and I knew the direction the team was headed, and they weren't going to win for another 2-3 years. And mm-hmm. it was very cool to watch the Pirates get to the playoffs last year. It was neat for me just because that was my first home in Major League Baseball. So I would have loved to stayed in Pittsburgh my whole career, but I wanted to win, and I knew that they needed some parts. The Pirates needed some parts to help get to another level, and 2 years later, I was in the playoffs, so it was the right thing for me to do at that time. It's such a short window. I played for 15 years, and it goes by so quick. It goes by so quick, and I had an injury in Pittsburgh. I could have been done, and I don't know how quick that window is going to close. I wanted to win. At that time, the Pirates were not going to win in the next 4 or 5 years, and I was able to get to the playoffs with the Oakland A's.
Rebecca, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, you talk about injuries in this book, Jason, and your low tolerance for guys who take one off the foot, take one off the shin, and you don't have much patience with it. Why not?
Well, Lee makes me out to be Tommy Tough Guy in this book. But, you know, it's just, it's part of the game. You're going to get your bumps. You're going to get your bruises. And every time I'd foul a ball off my foot, whether it was killing me, broke, or whatever, maybe get right back in there.
Because?
It's just one of those things. Every time I did it, and maybe it's just a personal thing that I did, I'd get right back in there, and I'd always hit the ball harder. I always get a hit. These guys that are running around, here's the deal. If you're hurt, get off the field. get back in the box, and then let's move the game along. But the guys that have like a little foul ball and they, you know, bounce around home plate for 5 minutes, come on, man.
Yeah.
And then that guy will get at first base and steal on the next pitch. You know, you're yeah. like, really? What was that about at home plate?
Yeah. You know, Jason, you were hit with the baseball when you were batting 254 times. That's fifth all time. Why didn't you just get out of the way more often?
That's a question I get asked a lot. You know what? Is the scouting report on me was pitch me in. Mm-hmm. I knew it. There's scouting reports everywhere. I would rather have a bruise on my bicep as opposed to trying to get out of the way, getting my arms up and having a broken rib and be out 4 to 6 weeks. I will say that I never dove into it, but I did not get out of the way. And you know what? I'm on base. It was a weapon for me. They pitched me in and sometimes a little too far in. And yeah, I wore an elbow pad.
And they didn't like that either.
Well, I wore an elbow pad because, and I didn't want to, but it got to the point I was getting hit so much, I started getting these huge contusions my second year in the big leagues on my arm. And the trainer said, no, you got to wear this or your arm's going to explode. So that's the reason I had to start wearing it.
And some pitchers didn't like the fact you were wearing protection, right?
No, but that's part of the game. It didn't bother me what people thought of me. But it got to the point where I got so used to it, I would wear it against Tim Wakefield. You know, little knuckleballs coming up, but it was one of those things that just came.
Okay.
I had to wear it.
Okay, you've been out of baseball now for 4 years. How much does it hurt, Jason, to get hit by a baseball when you're batting? What's the pain level?
It hurts. Baseballs are hard. It hurts. I could sit here and throw a baseball right, and if it hits you, it's going to hurt.
No thanks.
But you know what? It's you have the adrenaline going during a game. It hurts probably after a lot more than it does during the game. And I was so locked in on what I was trying to do to help my team that day win a baseball game that, yeah, it hurts, yes, but it hurts a lot worse afterwards.
Lee Judge, you have a little experience with getting hit by a baseball.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I wrote a story. The bases were loaded, and who is it, Betemeet? Mm-hmm. He was at the plate, and the pitch came inside, and he jumped out of the way, and they had the closer warming up. And if he gets hit by the pitch, they go up by one.
Yeah.
Bring in the closer, you win the game. So I wrote a story saying, hey, it was an 81-mile-an-hour slider. You got to wear it. You know, get hit by the pitch, win the
help
game.
Help your team win the game. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Kevin Seitzer invited me to come down and take batting practice. And I got an idea. It's like, oh, you know, I said he ought to do it. I'll do it. I'll go down and get hit by a pitch. And Jason was really in favor of that. He thought that was the greatest idea ever. And so we were setting it up, and we had to get two cameras and get it all worked out so we could get it done. And he kept saying, well, 81, you're not really going to know what it's like. You got to get hit by 90. You know, crank it up to 90 and see what that's like. And he told me for
every— On the pitching machine you're talking about.
Off the pitching machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, for every pitch that you get hit by 90 miles an hour, I'll get hit by two. So we went down there, and I didn't intend to get hit by a 90-mile-an-hour pitch, but the pitching machine was acting a little funky that day, and it was going faster and slower and faster and slower, and we
just
thought we
luck.
Had it dialed
yeah.
in, and it came out at 92 miles an hour. I thought I was getting hit by 81, and I got smoked. And we had a few players there, and if you see the video, it's still online. They freaked out because they knew, wow, that was way too hard. Like, that was not 81 miles
an
hour.
You got hit where?
Well, I've only got one functioning kidney now, so yeah, I turned and took it in the back.
Yeah,
And which is what you do to protect yourself when you're at the plate. If you're going to get hit by a pitch, you turn, make sure you don't get hit in the hands or, like Jason's saying, in the ribs. Try to take it in the large muscles of the back. So I walked up to Jason and said, okay, I got hit by 90. He said, let's see it. And he goes, man, that looked like it hurt. No way.
Deals off.
Yeah, deals off as soon as I fool you into getting hit by 90 miles an hour.
And how badly did it hurt?
It was really interesting because the first thing that happens, you get an incredible adrenaline rush. And we had to cut part of the video because I was cussing so fast and so it was just pouring out. And I thought, wow, this is why guys charge the mound, because your body thinks, hey, I just got attacked. You know, here's mm-hmm. a bunch of adrenaline. Do something with it. It wasn't really, like you said, at the time, it wasn't bad. And but boy, the next day.
The bruise.
Yeah, and I think what the players liked about it is, first of all, someone in the media stepped in and took one, and they thought that was a great idea. And then I made a video of the bruise and could show it to people, and people freaked about the bruise, mm-hmm. like how big it was. But I think players like that because it's like they can't come out the next day and go, hey, look where I got hit. Mm-hmm. But they had the same kind of bruises, giant purple, black bruises.
Hey, your bruise was remarkable, you told me. It was just huge.
Yeah, it went from like my spine to, you know, around my stomach. It might be that I was carrying a little extra weight, but
it wasn't
a lot of muscle for it to hit. But and it was an interesting experience for me because a bunch of the players asked me the great question, because it's like, okay, you had the guts to do it once. Would you do it again the next night? And mm-hmm. Kevin Seitzer heard that, goes, forget that. Would you do it again the next at bat? Because if they know you can be intimidated by that and you're going to start jumping out of the way like Jason is talking about, then they'll throw down and away. Because every time you get intimidated, you back off the plate. And it was easy for me to say, yeah, you should do this. You should get hit by a pitch. And as soon as they said, would you do it again? It's like, I don't know, man. That hurt quite a bit.
So then did you walk away from that experience understanding why the Royals player Betamine had jumped out of the way? I mean, was it just, I mean, or not?
Yeah, I understood why he jumped out of the way, and I still thought he should have got hit by a pitch.
Yeah, should have taken one for the team.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I'm not the one who's trying to play every day and stay in the lineup. Because let's say you really do get injured badly and you're out. I don't know. Jason, what do you think?
I agree. I can't remember the play was, but I think it was a slider down in. Is that what it was?
It was a slider that kind of came in on him. He hung it and it came inside.
Yeah, I mean, situation. I mean, it's such a split-second reaction, and that was Betterman's first reaction, was to get out of the way.
Yeah. Hey, how frustrated, Jason, you know, do the players get at the knowledge level or maybe the lack of knowledge the fans have and for that matter, the media as well?
Well, I think one of the main things we try to do with this book is, and whoever gets it, you will at least get one thing out of it. But I think we wanted to make it more enjoyable, whether you're watching it at home, the game more enjoyable, whether you're watching it at home on TV or where you're at the ballpark. There's certain things, because baseball can be boring. It's the greatest game in this world, but it could be boring if you really don't know what's going on. And I think when we first sat down to try to do this, that's what we wanted to do, and make it more knowledgeable for people who are not out on the field.
The point being, there's always something going on out there.
Yes, and I watch games at home now, and you're sitting there, and it looks very easy on TV, very easy. I mean, I find myself going, swing the bat, and I'm like, Jason, knock it off. It's 91, it looks straight, but the ball's cutting or sinking. So I think that's what we wanted to do more than anything, and that's what intrigued me about this whole thing so much, was that Lee was the first reporter I've ever seen that was trying to get inside the heads of ballplayers, what they're thinking. you know, what were you thinking on with a runner on second base, no outs, 1-1 score in the eighth inning? When you did get him over, when you hit the ground, what was in your mind? What pitch were you looking for? And I started watching it for 2-3 weeks, and it was really, really neat. First time in 15 years that I've seen a guy or a reporter actually try to get inside the player's heads. And that's when the whole thing started.
A batter would prefer what? A 95-mile-an-hour fastball or a pitch that breaks?
If you see 100 miles an hour once or twice, you're locked in. If it's up out over the plate, you're going to get it. Now, I mean, there's pitch sequences where you can get, but if a hitter sees a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, you want to hit the straight one. Breaking balls, the ones
breaking
that
balls
move,
are the hard
those
ones.
Are the harder ones. But it doesn't matter if you're throwing 88 or 98. Once you see it 2 or 3 times, you're going to be right on it.
Yeah.
These guys are that good.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with Jason Kendall and Lee Judge about their new book, Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game Is Really Played, the inside look at Major League Baseball. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. In this hour, we're talking with Jason Kendall and Lee Judge about their new book, Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game Is Really Played. What's going on out in the field that you had no idea what was going on out there? Jason, when the game begins, do you know how good your pitcher is going to be based on the warm-up pitches, or is that not an indication of what you got?
No. And you know what? You could tell by the first 8 pitches he throws on in the bullpen. I've seen guys throw lights out in the bullpen, and they'll come in and they just won't have it. It takes usually about 4 or 5 of the first pitches when he takes the mound before the game starts, and then you can kind of tell what he has. Because it's 2 different worlds from the bullpen. Then you come out there, there's no cages around you or anything. It's you and the hitter, and let's go. And you can tell really, really quick on where his location is. And on those first 8 warm-up pitches, you could tell if he's up, you better try to work him down. And this is just as far as fans can look at stuff like that. And it might go to the first hitter. He doesn't have that slider he had in the bullpen. We got to work something else. But that's the fun part about catching is you got to really, really learn how to
manage these guys.
Get him through it and get it to the end of the bullpen.
A big difference between handling your number one pitcher versus your number three or number four, no question.
No question at all. But, I mean, you're also dealing with that. It's different types of personalities. It really is personalities. Who to pat on the butt, who to kick in the butt. And when you see players or the catchers making trips to the mound, it all depends on that person's personality. Can he take it? Hey, you better get going, or all right, man, I need to tell him a joke or something, or get him to lighten up. It all depends on who's pitching personality. But as far as your number one and your number five, they're all big league pitchers. Yeah, James Shields and Bruce Chinn, you're looking at 2 completely different pitchers. But that's the beauty about baseball is anything can happen on any given night, and you're looking at 2 different types of pitchers with different stuff. And that's why you have these 5-man rotation, because they all match up differently with different teams.
Now, when you guys warm up, you warm a pitcher up before the batter steps into the box to begin an inning. The pitcher has all kinds of different signals he gives to the catcher to let him know what kind of pitch is coming. Walk us through those.
I mean, it's as far as the warm ups. You flying
your
glove,
wrist up.
Flicking your wrist up to the catcher. That's a fastball. You
palm up,
balls, palm up, down, and then bring your glove back as a changeup. A lot of guys throw splits now. They just put the glove to the ground. Sliders kind of swiping your glove away.
Well, why do you need to know that? I mean, you're
well in warm-ups, just in case, because you're not giving signals in warm-ups.
Yeah.
And so that's just a way to, here's a fastball. And usually guys throw maybe 2 or 3 fastballs, throw 1 or 2 curveballs or changeups or whatever their outpitch might be. And then last one's a fastball. You throw it down and game on.
Outpitch is what?
Outpitch is usually your best breaking ball with 2 strikes, the one that you see in the dirt all the time. Usually it's a slider or curve. It all depends on the pitcher.
It's the pitch you want the hitter to miss.
It's going to be your strikeout pitch. They call it outpitch. It's usually your best breaking ball. Could be a split. It's usually something in the dirt outpitch you're going to get a guy to chase.
Yeah. You say that pitchers sometimes play games, even mind games, with their warm-up pitches. What's going on there?
Well, you know what? Some guys might – a lot of your veteran guys – I mean, I remember I caught Trevor Hoffman, and at the end of his career, he was throwing 85 fastball. He'd come out. I mean, he had a reputation, though. You knew when Hells Bell was playing and Trevor Hoffman was coming, and it was something special. But guys might be tired. but they had this reputation. All right, man, I ain't got nothing today. Oh, there's one to the backstop. And yeah, and you, as on deck hitter, you're going, it's kind of like the Bull Durham thing. I mean, it's well, you know what? That pitcher might not have his best stuff that day, and he's trying to do anything and everything he can to
mess with the hitter's head.
Yeah, get a little advantage for him. And it definitely happens a lot. And it's a lot of times it's because they're tired. They might not have their best stuff that day, and they know it, but their presence and then a little bit effective wildness goes on in there, and the hitter sees it. It could do damage.
Well, I suspect this moment wasn't intentional, but one of my favorite moments in Major League Baseball was some All-Star game a number of years ago when John Crux in the box against Randy Johnson, who's pitching in the All-Star game. In the first pitch, Randy Johnson throws it 5 feet over Crux's head, you know, against the backstop, and Crux just started laughing, you know, as if he's going to stand in the box against Randy Johnson after something like that's happened, you know?
Yeah, they'll do things like that to, you know, like Jason says, intimidate someone or say, yeah, you better hang loose up there. Don't be, you know, leaning out trying to hit that outside corner because I don't really know where this is going.
Yeah, yeah. How difficult is it to steal a base?
Well, I mean, it's difficult, especially with a guy like Sal Perez. I mean, you're looking at one of the best throwers in the game. But you know what? A lot of it is the pitcher. I mean, if he's over 1-3 to the plate.
1.3 seconds you're talking about.
You have a pretty good chance. So a lot of it's off the pitcher. As a catcher, you throw out the guys who you can throw out, the hit and runs, the swing and miss hit and runs, the guys that don't get good jumps. And I don't care what anybody says, but the hardest throw in baseball to make, in my mind, in my opinion, is throwing a runner out second because you see the guy get the jump and you want to try to rush. And if you rush as a catcher, you're going to launch. I used to be able to launch balls in the center field with the best of them. But you have to be under control. And if you see that guy get a good jump, your body automatically wants to rush, and that's when you get the bad throw.
You write in the book that so oftentimes, Jason, the catcher, when he makes that key throw from home plate to second base, your fingers sometimes aren't on the seams of the ball as you'd like them to be. You've just got to take the best grip you've got and throw it, even though it's not ideal, right?
Absolutely, and that's where the mechanics come in, and the footwork, and your whole body has to work as one. I would say 1-2 out of every 10 throws, you will get an actual four-seam grip, and that's what you want. Mm-hmm. But because it's such a quick exchange, you might have a two, and that's when your ball's sinking. But that one, I'd say 2 out of 10, maybe, you will get that four-seam exchange. And, you know, for the kids out there now, Little League kids, catch the ball, get the four seams, and throw it without looking, and when you're just warming up. Mm-hmm. Those are things that right now it's – you kind of have to do at, you know, I'm coaching Little League, you know, 10-year-olds, and it's so much fun. But right now, get the four seams without looking and try to make, because that's where you get the true carry of the baseballs with the four seams. But everything going so quick when a runner steals, you're not always going to get that. And that's where your mechanics have to come in.
But you have to, I assume you have to adjust your throw based on the grip you have on the ball. Do you have your fingers on the seams or do you not?
Yeah, well, you do it just a matter of how you get it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you want the four seam, the true flight of the ball, but it's more your mechanics, and if you can get on top of the ball is where you can straighten out the seams.
Jason, you've charged the mound exactly twice in your career against pitcher Joe Kennedy and another pitcher, John Lackey. Why did you do it? What was going on?
Well, I think more than anything is I'm not big on getting yelled at when I was playing, and both of them hit me. Well, actually, the one with Kennedy, he hit me, and I was walking down to first base. There's two things you can do if you get hit. Go get him or go to first base. Don't stand around and let everybody, the umpire, get in front of you. And Joe, I was walking down to first base, and he said, get that, talking about my elbow pad, and I just went.
The pitcher didn't like the fact that you had the elbow pad on.
He was yelling at me, and there's some words that I didn't like. Yeah. As far as the Lackey one, it was a 3-1 count, 2-1 count, I think, and bases were loaded, one out. I had a free ribby. I wasn't trying to get – he threw me a curveball. I got out of the way, and he said something very similar.
We're questioning your manhood, basically.
Was saying, tell me to get my elbow pad out of the way, but there was a couple, 3-4 words that
preceded that. Yeah.
Yes, and then it's kind of a little switch went off of my head, and on a baseball field, I couldn't control that switch when people yelled at me.
Yeah. And what was the result of both of those incidents?
These were later in my career, so that was a big fine and suspended.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't want to do it. You clearly.
No, but I'm not going to let anybody speak to me that way. And as far as with the Angel one, we were in a pit race with him. I mean, it was there was a lot of hatred in those years, and we ended up winning the division that year, I believe. But you're not going to let anybody try to get the best of you as far as your team in any type of advantage.
Mm-hmm. Lee Judge, you talk in this book about, again, a situation, say the runner's on first base and you want to prevent that runner from stealing second. What Jason talks about is advising pitchers to hold the ball in the set position a little longer than usual. Why would you do that?
Well, the runner's trying to time the pitcher. And if you reach a set position, and let's say it's 1,001, you go. 1,001, you go. 1,001, you go. Well, the runner figures that out, and he breaks at the mm-hmm. right time. So he actually had a sign he would give the pitcher, remind them, hey, you know, mix it up a little bit. So you go 1,001, you go right away, you go 1,001, 1,002, you go. It's yeah. just a way to keep that runner from getting a good jump over at first base.
And you also talk about the fact that the runner is just, he's just quivering with tension, and he's anxious because
he's
trying.
Yeah, it's like being in the starting blocks of a sprint, and if the guy won't shoot the gun off,
You keep him there longer, it's going to slow him down a little bit.
Yeah, and Jason said, which is amazing to me, he said he could look at a runner and tell whether he was going.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? Yeah. He said it's just body language, like yeah. he was picking up on something, like he would look over and go, that guy's about to go.
Yeah. I loved, you have just a moment in this book, Jason, where you describe the what happens as a catcher. You're the second closest person in the entire ballpark to hearing the sound of a ball hitting the bat. And you say when a ball is just crushed, what's that sound like?
It's pretty neat, to be honest with you. But I could use that with our pitcher, too. Hey, man, my ears are ringing. You might want to get the ball down a little bit. But it's amazing. And you could smell the wood. It's something special that if you only ask a catcher, they'll know what you're talking about. I mean, it's something special. And then, now obviously, you don't want to see a guy, you know, hitting home runs but
yeah.
off your team. But it's something special, and it's loud. It is loud. As loud as you guys think it is up there, it's a lot louder when contact.
Yeah. You also write about infield pop-ups, and you say this, Jason, people have no idea how hard it is to catch a major league pop fly. What's so difficult about it?
It's up there. It's up there, and I mean,
you can't see it sometimes.
You can't see it, and you know, especially like from one behind the plate, you got to turn around, the ball's coming back at you. But the communication, it is so unbelievable, and now I'm watching it from a different angle, and it's just neat. It's neat to me because I know the game. Nobody's ever going to know the game to its fullest, but watching these guys and watching the communication they have. And there was a ball hit the other day that Escobar got. Is it coming down? I mean, it was yeah. one of those. And, like, it's nothing. But, I mean, a lot of, it's practice. But it's amazing.
When the ball goes up, the catcher often loses sight of it because, you know, it's just shot up and he's been looking forward. We got a story in the book where Jason was chasing what he thought was a ball and it turned out to be a seagull.
It happens. Well, yeah. We're playing in the Metrodome in Minnesota with that white thing they used to have up there.
It was amazing.
I couldn't see the ball when
you
I was up there watching
the
game.
Could not see the ball. And that yeah. was the biggest home field advantage to any team
any
that I've
team
ever played
ever.
Against.
Yeah. I want to thank Jason Kendall, Lee Judge, for coming in. The book, again, Throwback, A Big League Catcher Tells How the Game is Really Played. Really enjoyed having you guys. Thanks so much
for
taking some
us.
Time.
Thanks for having
you
us.
Bet.